I can have some men help me. 1 Samuel 6 and verse 20. I believe it was last Sunday night. I lose track of days and times, and I'm a little confused on timing right now, but last Sunday night we finished with this passage, and somebody said that I never said with the Philistines the game they was playing. And the game they were playing was hot potato, where you take a potato. I can remember doing it as a kid, and it's hot, and you don't want to hold it, so you pass it on. So when the Philistines got the ark, they sent it to one city. That city didn't want it. They said, well, let's send it to my friends. They send it up there. That city doesn't want it. They send it to another Philistine city. That city doesn't want it. So finally, they send it back to the Jews. But what you need to remember as we pick up today, what did the Jews do with it? Hot potato too? They didn't want it either. Everybody wants God in their life until they realize who God is. And then they want some other God. Verse 20. And the men of Beth Shemesh said, who is able to stand before this holy God, before this holy Lord God? And to whom shall we go up? Shall he go up from us? And they sent messengers to the inhabitants of Kirjath-Jearim, or something like that. By the way, when I read these words, I know you don't like them, do you? Have you ever been to Wisconsin? I think they got their names from the same place. Saying, the Philistines have brought again the ark of the Lord. Come ye down and fetch it up to you. Here, you can have it. And the men of whatever the name of this city is came and fetched up the ark of the Lord and brought it into the house of Abinadab in the hill and sanctified. They set apart Eleazar, his son, to keep the ark of the Lord. We assume someone that was a priest. And it came to pass while the ark abode in this city, Kirjath-Jearim, that the time was long, for it was 20 years. And all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. But the idea being is not during those 20 years, but after 20 years, the people were lamenting and, you know, weeping and those sorts of things for the Lord. And Samuel spake unto all the house of Israel, saying, if you do return unto the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the strange gods and Ashtaroth from among you, and prepare your hearts unto the Lord, and serve him only, and he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. Then the children of Israel put away. As a boy, I heard this pronounced incorrectly every single time it was pronounced. It's not Balaam. Balaam is a plural word. It's Baalim. It's Baalim. And you have to pronounce it that way because you're going to miss the point if you don't. They didn't have one Baal. They had multitudes. Fact of the matter is, do you know that archaeologists have found among the Jewish cities many of these little things in people's houses? In Ashtaroth, well, we'll talk about what that means later. That's also plural. Both of them are plural words. I am is the masculine plural in Hebrew. Cherubim, seraphim. O-T-H is the feminine plural. You get that in Behemoth. We continue. Verse 5, and Samuel said, gather all Israel to Mizpah, and I will pray for you unto the Lord. And they gathered together to Mizpah. By the way, Mizpah is simply a Hebrew word that means the watch place or the watchtower. And there's actually several of these for obvious reasons. They had to have places that were watching for the Philistines. It says, and they drew water and poured it out before the Lord and fasted on that day and said there, we have sinned against the Lord. And Samuel judged the children of Israel in Mizpah. And the moment these words were out of their mouth, and the people, look at me, after 20 years were seeking the Lord, the next line is important for you. When the Philistines heard that the children of Israel were gathered together to Mizpah, they clapped and were so happy, weren't they? The lords of the Philistines went up against Israel, and when the children of Israel heard it, they were afraid of the Philistines. Tonight, I'm going to speak on these verses. I've entitled this 20 years. This morning was my sweet sermon. Tonight is not it. If you were coming for sweetness, this ain't that one. I feel like tonight after the service, we go no place except just pray. If you do not feel the same, you are in the wrong church. Did you hear me? You're in the wrong place. If what happened this week in our nation doesn't bother you, this is not the church for you. You should go to the evangelical church where you can hold hands and sing Kumbaya. We're going to talk about 20 years. Let's pray. Father, I would ask that you would bless as we look at this text and others. We consider the children of Israel who for 20 years kind of wandered around and then got back to the place where they realized that maybe the living God, they needed him. But that didn't end real well because not everybody was happy when they were seeking the Lord. Help us to hear from these simple ideas tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. The problem with this title, when I talk about the United States, it's been longer than 20 years. So Pastor Warren will do a broad history. Our country changed radically after the Civil War. The Civil War is way outside of any of our purview. None of us have ever known anybody that fought in the Civil War. It would just be too long ago. But there's no question, for reasons that I cannot really put my finger on, after 1865, our country had an infusion of ideas called liberalism. In the northern United States, a battle ensued very quickly. Some of it ensued also in the South. The South Southern Seminary in Louisville actually hired a man. I better not say his name because my mind might be on the wrong name. He had gone to Europe to study. He came back. They hired him, and he became a liberal. And in those days, and in these days, Southern Seminary fired him. The South had less problems with liberalism than the North. By the way, not because the South is more spiritual, but because the South was less educated. Pastors in the South tended not to go to seminary, so they weren't exposed to liberal ideas. You'll still get redneck fundamentalists that talk about seminaries being a cemetery, because this fear is in their minds. If you go to seminary, you learn liberal ideas, you come home, and you don't believe the Bible anymore. So I'm just going to read some things. In the 1870s, I'm assuming most of you know, in the 1870s started the liberal fundamentalist controversy, primarily in the northern part of the United States from about 1870s through about 1925 or so. There was a war. Who won the war? Liberals. In the north, Bible-believing Christians, please look at me, lost every single denomination, every single school, every mission agency. We lost everything. That was from 1870s to the 1920s. Southern Baptists were having their own battles. We don't have time to discuss that tonight. That's outside of the purview of what we're talking about. 1932, FDR was elected president and immediately repealed what? Prohibition. My friend, what happened to me this weekend, look at me, is you all with me? Happened to Christians in 1932. It was 32 or 33, whenever it happened. Christians had the air taken out of them. We lost the denominations. Prohibition was a Christian idea. We lost that. Right around the same time was the Scopes trial. We were made a public ridicule in the nation through the media. In the 1940s and 1950s, a new movement started called New Evangelicalism. New Evangelicalism was simply this simple. From the 1870s and forward, there were liberals and there were fundamentalists. And all of a sudden, there was a group that wanted to fit in between. This group came, this is not a whole night tonight, but this group came in between, and they wanted to hold hands with liberals and hold hands with fundamentalists. It was called New Evangelicalism. We have never recovered from that. Out of that grew the Billy Graham crusade. And Billy Graham, very straightforwardly, his own son is more conservative than him for the last 50 years. Billy Graham started holding hands with liberals and Catholics on platforms and would even send people back to those Catholic churches, back to the liberal churches. That was the battle of the 50s and 60s. And look at me, and we still haven't really won that battle. There are still Christians that can't figure out who you support and who you don't support. Well, when I was a small boy, the Supreme Court decided that prayer and reading the Bible in the public schools was no longer an American idea. So in the very early 60s, that was excluded from the school. When my older sister went to school, the Lord's Prayer in the King James Version was still read over the loudspeaker every morning. And they read the Bible in class in public school in the 50s up to about 62, 63, 64. That was gone. When I was in high school, I remember being on a bus discussing abortion. And in 1973, the Supreme Court decided no more discussion. We'll make the decision. And now we have abortion. In the 1990s, churches got to the place where they discovered a new way of doing church, which basically is no church at all and no Christianity, and it swept the nation. This week, 2015, we have had the defeat of the Defense of Marriage Act, and now we have gay marriage. Everyone look at me. That's longer than 20 years. It's been a long time. I'm going to say this to you, and I'm done with the introduction. I see no hope for this country. Jim, I'm sorry to say this. I am very ambivalent about having a patriotic service next week. Did you just hear me? I am very ambivalent. I see nothing for me as a Christian to rejoice about when our president, our mayor of Chicago, and everybody else, every media person I saw, listen to me, I have never seen the media more happy than they were this weekend. People had smiles this big. We have accomplished something. So let's begin the text and we'll work through this. Some of this will not be pleasant, I admit. As I look at this text and I thought about our country, these are the thoughts that I had. Number one, there will always be Philistines. I think we read this and we think, oh, these are physical enemies and we don't have to worry about physical enemies. But friends, in one way or another, there's always going to be Philistines that are either going to attack us or, as we'll get to later, going to do something else to us. There will always be Philistines. In 1 Samuel 6:21, the Philistines have brought the ark of the Lord. So they controlled the ark for a period of time. In chapter 7, verse 3, it talks about that God, through Samuel, says, you know what? If you do these things, the Lord will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. Chapter 7, verse 7. The moment the Philistines heard about this, they gathered that Israel was gathered together to Mizpah, the lords of the Philistines went up against Israel. Number one, there will always be Philistines. Now, I'm going to develop this as we move forward. The Philistines under that. In the ancient world, they lived in five cities, or five city-states, primarily along the coast. They probably were of Greek plus origins. We talked about that several months ago. One of the questions you have to ask is, why are these little city-states along the coast suddenly so powerful? I'm not going to repeat anything. You can do your own research. We do know this. There is actually a base in Egypt that named some of these peoples, and we're sure that almost all of them are from the Greek area. Some of them might be even from some of the islands around Italy. But these people came in, and they were of Greek plus origin. Probably there were already people there of Greek origin, the Philistines from the time of Abraham. I don't want to go back through that material. Next, they were more advanced technologically than Israel. That is the big difference. As I said a few weeks back or a few months ago, they were in the Iron Age and Israel was in the what? Bronze Age. And understand, friend, if you have an iron sword fighting a bronze sword, it's like taking something through butter. I mean, when the Jews fought them, it was not fair competition. That's the reason the Jewish fighters did well in certain circumstances, but they could never go one-to-one in flat country because, frankly, they technologically were in a different category. This is right at the time of the switching of Iron Age and Bronze Age, and there's a huge difference. Stop. Do you realize after David's time and Solomon's time, you don't hear about the Philistines anymore? Why not? They didn't have any advantage anymore. That was gone. The Jewish people learned how to get iron weapons. Just that simple, friend. Next, they were a constant threat. Very interesting to me, they were not a threat before or after this era. They were only a threat during that time of the judges and during the time of Samuel and David. And after that, you don't hear anything because they no longer were the threat in a big way. Here's the most important thing of all of this. They were replaced by other Philistines later. There will always be Philistines. They might not have that name. Please look at me, friend. I'm just kind of listing because the hard stuff is going to be in point three. I want you to know something tonight. When you read this text and you read about Philistines, this is what we do. Because we're like, who cares? There's always going to be Philistines. There's always going to be Philistines opposed to what you and I believe and how we're supposed to be living. Number two, the Philistines are always after us. Always. Always. Another way of saying this, they're always on the attack. They're always aggressive. What do we know about Christians in America? Are we aggressive? What is the number one characteristic of American Christianity? Complacent, silent, sleepy. This morning I'm preaching on quiet time with God, and I had people sleeping. I'm like, I think that's pretty much who we are. We sleep a lot, and we sleep very well. I want to say this to you. This has nothing to do with the sermon. What happened last Friday will never be overturned apart from a... You say, why not? Because what happened in 1962, 3, and 4 was never overturned. Because Christians, my parents' generation of Christians, did nothing. It could have been overturned then. It can't be overturned now. We don't have enough Christians in America. In your notes, the Philistines are always after us. In chapter 4, it says, and the word of the Lord came to Israel. Now, Israel went out against the Philistines to battle, and they pitched beside Ebenezer, and the Philistines pitched in Aphek. And the Philistines put themselves in array against Israel, and when they joined the battle, Israel was smitten before the Philistines, and they slew of the army in the field about 4,000 men. After that, they come back out to fight again, and it says, and the Philistines fought, and Israel was smitten. And they fled every man into his tent, and there was a very great slaughter. Verse 11, and the ark of God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain. I mean, the Philistines never give up. They're always pushing, always pushing, always pushing, always pushing. Verse 7 of chapter 7 says, and when the Philistines heard that the children of Israel gathered together to Mizpah, the lords of the Philistines went up against Israel. There's always the push, always the push. Americans, Christians, are never pushing. I have in your notes about the prison break. By the way, Frenchie asked me a question. He said, have they caught the second guy? And the answer is? They shot the second guy. Now, I don't know why they didn't shoot him to end him, but he's still alive, I think. But may I say this? Jenny and I were in Mexico. We didn't have television most of the time. For whatever reason, one night we had television that had English-speaking news on, and we heard about the prison break the first night. It might have been a Nightline program. Somebody was interviewing 3 or 4 or 5 people about this prison break. One man said this. Kind of a crusty guy. I guarantee he's never going to be on the news again. He said 2 things. He said, that prison has grown slack. And guess what we found out after he said that? This was the first night. That prison had grown slack. They were not doing the things they were supposed to be doing because The prisoners are always trying to escape. The guards are just trying to maintain. And in the process of maintaining over a period of time, you get slack. By the way, the thing he said, and by the way, I didn't say it, but it is true. The guy said, I know exactly who helped these two guys. Sorry, an ugly woman. He said that nationally. And you know what? Was he right? Answer the question. He knew who did it right before anybody even, he didn't know the person. He said it was an ugly woman that these men, one of these men was manipulating. And I'm like, how did he know that? Because, by the way, they manipulate women's emotions. We're going to get to this later. You're not going to like me by the end of the night. And guess what happens? She helped this guy escape. Guess where she's going to be? In your notes. This man, by the way, said this. He said, security has grown slack, and an ugly woman has been turned and used by these men. And I thought that night, I would only add to this, security always grows slack. It's hard to be on point. It's hard to stay in the front line. Job 1, verse 7, and the Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it. If you ask the average Christian, how much have you prayed for America? None. How many people have you talked to about the Lord? None. How much time have you prayed for our country? None. But when you talk to Satan, he's always on the attack. He's always after us. Chapter 2, verse 2. And the Lord said unto Satan, from whence comest thou? And Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it. Peter says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about. He's always seeking us, seeking whom he may devour. Revelation 12, verse 9, this is talking about in the future, but the principles apply today, at least in principle. That great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the ongoing process, the whole world. And he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Verse 10, and I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. I'll say this, friend. Number one, there will always be Philistines. And number two, the Philistines are always after us. Number three, here's where things get tough. Forgive me. Pastor Warren is going to be as gentle as I can, but everything I say from this point forward is directed to the people in the chair you're seated in. We need to quit kidding ourselves. And by the way, I don't think this church can do anything to retard what's going on. I think it's way too late, but we can be a part of the solution or a potential solution. The Philistines don't just attack us. They prefer... Everyone look at me. Let me ask you a question. I want to see how your thinking is tonight. For 20 years, the Philistines didn't attack. When did they attack? When you returned to the Lord. Why? Because during that 20 years, what were the Jewish people doing? They were joining right in. Yeah, some of you are catching on. By the way, Philistines aren't coming after you as long as you're asleep. The Philistines don't just attack us, they attempt to assimilate us. They want to make us their own. Did you hear that? And by the way, if you're not being attacked where you live, where you work, in your family, that tells me something. You have been assimilated. Of course not. It breaks my heart, and I can't even remember who the people are in this room that know these people. But a young lady that I married, it breaks my heart. They come up to this area from where they live to visit her family, and they don't come to church on those Sundays because they don't want to offend their parents. By the way, you're not going to offend anybody, but you're also not going to win anybody because you have been assimilated. You are one of them. By the way, if you come to the Warren's house on Sunday morning, you got one of two options. You're either coming to church or you're staying home alone because we're coming to church. We don't pray about it. We don't ask people's opinion. I'm not interested in your opinion. We have been assimilated. Let's look at the text and see how you're doing. And Samuel spake unto the house of Israel, saying, remember, they've been mourning now. It's been 20 years. If you do return unto the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the strange gods and Ashtaroth from among you. And by the way, why would you have to tell them to do this? Because they have been assimilated. Prepare your hearts unto the Lord and serve him only, and he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. Then the children of Israel did put away, and it says two different phrases, Baalim and Ashtaroth. Now you notice I've already said this, so I'm going to say it again. Understand, they didn't put away one idol of Baal or Baal, and they didn't put away one idol of Ashtoreth. They put away many Baals. They put away many Ashtaroths. Did you get it? Now, let's see how you... Do you know what these people did? Are you familiar with these? There's a reason why the Jewish people like these gods. These two gods combined, I'm not going to get into all of it, and it changed a little bit place to place. They were the husband and wife or the boyfriend and the girlfriend. So let's just make it with... We have children present. When you went to temple and you were assimilated into this, you got to have the privilege of three things in one. You didn't just go get some religion. I don't have this in your notes. You got religion. Are you ready? You got sex. Did you hear me? And you normally got a little alcohol too. Because most of the time these were related to, this was before, this was later named the Bacchus cult. So when you went, look at me, when you went to do your religion, you got religion, chapel or church, brothel, and tavern all wrapped up in one. Sounds about like American Christendom. Baal or Baal. By the way, Baal is a Hebrew word. It's probably borrowed from some other place that means Lord. But it was one of the false gods. And Ashtaroth, which is also Astarte. Astarte, the Greeks picked up on both of these later. This was common stuff in that part of the world. Now, I see in your notes, Christians are downcast. They're discouraged. Well, at least you ought to be. How did this really happen? Next page. Here is Pastor Warren's opinion of what's going on in America. And I can think about it in Lake County Baptist. Some of these are now our church. There are two or three of these that really discourage me. I don't know what to do about them. And you'll know which ones they are. The first thing I see is this. Habits of silence. We have grown up being silent. Many of us never stood for Christ, never stood for right and wrong where we worked, and today it's normally illegal to do so. So we're too late. What you going to do when you can't even discuss your positions? When I worked in the hospital, we could still debate abortion. We could debate gay issues. My guess is in most places today, you are not allowed. And by the way, why are you not allowed? Because Christians across America had habits of silence. There's two things you don't discuss, politics and religion. And we've pretty much done a good job. Today, I don't think we can discuss. Where are we going to discuss it at? Does this bother you? Next. Addiction to the media. I've already said this. I don't think I have ever seen reporters as happy as I saw the day this was passed. I don't ever remember. Reporters are famous for the fake smile. They were glowing, every one of them. And the next thing out of their mouth was the gay pride parade that was going on today. This is the greatest thing in America since the freeing of the slaves under Lincoln, according to these people. And I'm like, those are two separate issues. One should have been done at the beginning of our country, and our forefathers knew it and thought slavery would go away And unfortunately, this thing called the cotton gin and the money people in the South could make overrode that, and we had to have a civil war. But my friend, oh, wait a minute. How many programs on television have a gay character? Let me ask the second question. How many programs that you watch have a gay character? Are you willing to stand against anything? And the answer is no. Television dominates our life. Next, exclusion from the public arena, from the public square, whatever term you would want to use. Exclusion from the public square. I don't know what else to say about that. Next, collapse of the, and I put in parentheses, Christian home. Collapse of the Christian home. The longer I pastor, the more I believe this. Christians' homes are no better, no different, and no healthier than unsaved people's homes. Please look at me up here, folks. I'm talking about this church. When I look at most families, I see no Christian homes are not better, they're not healthier, they're not distinct. They look about like unsaved people's homes. And in some cases, I saw James Dobson in the 1980s. He would say, if you belong to, and he wasn't using fundamentalists, you belong to an evangelical church, there is much less divorce in evangelical churches. I heard him a couple years ago saying, now that has been reversed. There is more divorce in our circles than in the world. Now, some of that is the world just doesn't get married. We are no, by the way, in this room, are we different? Look at me in the eyes. Do you have friends that have abandoned somebody to run off with somebody else that still has your approval? Yes or no? We approve everything. My unsaved father wouldn't approve stupid. And we cannot say this is wrong. It's happened right here among us, and some of us still have friends on Facebook. Don't you think there ought to be consequences in a church when someone does wrong? Yes or no? Did I not preach on church discipline? It starts with the preaching, and then it's the one another passages. It's what you do, but we don't do it. We go give those kind of people hugs. Uh-oh. We're the huggingest mess I've ever seen. But we can't say anything's right or wrong. Pastor Warren. Well, that leads to the next one. Tolerance and love as the primary message of Christianity. You say at Lake County Baptist? Have you? By the way, I'm not talking about what you say. I talked to somebody this week about this. I said, it's not what we say, it's what we do. We tolerate everything. We smile at everybody. It's always interesting to me to go to graduation parties and parties like that. And I'm not referring to anyone this year particularly. It's just interesting to see the groups of people that hang out. And you kind of like, no, why is this person with that person? Because Christians in our church now believe the most important thing they do is love everybody and let I love you and I tolerate. By the way, Victoria, Kika, do I love you? If you go be stupid, do you think I'm going to give you a hug? If you think so, you don't know me very well. By the way, what about you? Is it okay what people do? Is everything cool now? Now, in your notes, I think I've said this in this church a couple of times. From the First Great Awakening, 1730s and 40s, to the 1970s, if you were an evangelical, a gospel-believing Christian, nationwide, your favorite verse was John 3:16. If you'd have asked a kid, somebody when I was a kid, what's your favorite verse? Most people are going to say, for God so loved the world, or they were going to say, for by grace are you saved through faith. Do you know in the last 20 to 30 years that has now changed too? You know what the verse is? Judge not. That's our life. You say, Pastor Warren, you're just judgmental. I'm not. Come on, folks. We're in love with Baal. We have Christian homes where fathers and mothers will not do right, and we're okay with that. Something's wrong. How about this one? 1 John 4, for God is love. Do you notice that 1 John 1, 5 has something to say too? And it's a long time before 1 John 4. I think it says this. Now, this is the message we have heard of him and declare unto you that God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. So if you're going to talk about God being love, you better start with God being light. We now have a place where we tolerate everything. Next, inability to draw lines. Inability to draw lines. Francis Schaeffer, funny looking guy if you've ever seen him. He's died in 1984. The year he was dying, he wrote his last book. In many ways, his most important book, though most evangelicals hate it. Hate it. He was an old man dying of cancer, and he wrote his last book called The Great Evangelical Disaster. And the book only had one idea. He said the problem with even, he was not talking about fundamentalists, but we're just there too. He says the problem with us is we draw a line. And we move the line. We draw a line. And we move the line. We draw a line. And by the way, when do we undraw the line? Whenever the culture does. Wherever the culture pushes, we just keep retreating. He said this in 1984. Folks, that's a long time ago. And you know what I have found? Most of us cannot draw lines. We cannot draw lines for ourselves, and we cannot draw lines for our children. There is never a line that we draw that we hold. We just keep retreating. May I say this to you? I'm not trying to be cruel. I don't see any difference in churches than I do in unsaved people. Maybe we don't get drunk. What else? Please tell me what else is different. Not much. We just keep retreating. You know, if this church here, if I could transport us back to 1950, we would feel out of place in most churches. Do you know, Mike, I know you and Pam were here, and I'm not saying I want to be, but when I was here in the 70s, most of Ron Hill's sermons, almost every one of them was negative. I don't think people remember that. They preached against everything. Today, I have talked for 4 months or so on child rearing only to have some of you not show up for any of the classes because you're not interested. You are just like the unsaved. And this is the Fundamental Baptist Church. By the way, tonight, how many churches are having Sunday night service? 2-5% of American churches have Sunday night services. Why? People don't want to come. We continue. The inability to draw lines. Jeremiah said this. I think this is the hardest verse in the Bible. A wonderful, and that doesn't mean wonderful in the way, well, that's wonderful. Something full of wonder that catches your attention. And a horrible thing is committed in the land. The prophets prophesy falsely, and the priests bear rule by their means, and my people love to have it so. And what will you do in the end thereof? Isaiah says, which say to the seers, see not, and to the prophets, prophesy not unto us right things. Speak unto us smooth things. Prophesy deceits. Get you out of the way. Turn aside of the path. Cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us. Isaiah 28. But they also have erred through wine and through strong drink are out of the way. The priest and the prophet have erred through strong drink. They are swallowed up of wine. They are out of the way through strong drink and they err in vision. They stumble in judgment. For all tables are full of vomit and filthiness so that there is no place clean. Next, withdrawal from our callings in society. God has called us to be the salt of the earth. And he has called us to be the light of the world. I will say this, the best thing Lake County Baptist has done in my 19 years, if I look back and say, what am I happiest about? Are you looking at me? Is we have produced young people to some degree that don't work at Walmart. Most churches like ours, we do minimal work, minimal jobs, and stay at home watching television. We have produced young people that are teachers, professors, and many different things with some, look at me, with some impact in the world. But Christians have been withdrawing from their callings probably since the 1870s. Meaning, we just make a living. If you go to my brother's church in Southern Illinois, there isn't an educated person in the church. That's not an accident. It also means what? We have no voice, because when you withdraw from areas of serious service, you have no voice. You're not the employer, you're the employed, and you're employed at the bottom, and you never have a voice. By the way, I think the best thing this church has done is some of our young people we've sent out, officers in the Navy, where at least they might have some small voice. Last, this gets particular, forgive me. Toleration of divorce, remarriage, and no marriage. A deacon that used to come to this church and his wife, children live in the basement, have sex, no problem. Go to one of these little Gracie churches in Zion where everything is love and tolerance. And by the way, you say, you're being mean. Who are we kidding? By the way, folks, why can't we stand against homosexuality? We can't stand against anything. When my little sister came home to my mom and dad's house, dad was not a Christian. And they weren't married. Dad said, you're not staying here. We have Christian families. Move them right in. See, I'm a Christian. Really? We tolerate divorce, remarriage, or no marriage. Do I need to give you the rest of this? Lois, give me the rest of this statement. There's only two qualifications. And you're happy. As long as you love each other. And by the way, is there anything more important than loving each other and being happy? How about God? How about truth? No. As long as you, hey, they're in a better place. I know it's their fourth marriage, but they're in a better place. Really? By the way, folks, I understand divorce. Bible allows for divorce. I think it allows for remarriage. But I'm pretty sure what's going on in America doesn't have anything to do with the Bible. I think it has a lot more to do with we just want to be happy. We don't care about our kids. We don't care about where we came from. Everything is my happiness. By the way, if you want to know how this translates from Greek into English, right under this toleration, just write these things down. Here's the first one. Whatever. What's the second one? So what's the big deal? I want you to look at me. I love these young ladies here. Nina, these three here. Jordan, too, but I know these a lot longer. If these girls decide they're going to live and shack up with somebody, and that there means that ain't happening. And they're not getting approval from me. I don't think, Atong, would you be happy if that happened? Would there be like a war? Of course, it wouldn't happen, first of all, because these girls are going to do right. But may I say this? We have people right here in our midst that hug every rebel that's ever been through this church. If I learn about some party, they're at that party hugging those rebels, and we wonder what happened to America. We can't, folks. We can't draw a line and say, here I stand. Look at me. I'm not talking about bizarre stuff. I'm not talking anything strange. We're talking basic morality. We cannot draw lines. Hey, Pastor, they love each other. Isn't that, let me think now, wasn't that the same argument they just used in the Supreme Court? Do you understand why you can't stand against it? You have made the same argument. The same arguments that was it Kennedy? It was Kennedy, wasn't it? The same arguments that Kennedy made are the exact same arguments that you make. You just don't make it about homosexuality. I want to ask you a question. Why not? Same argument. What happens when somebody wants to live with one man, two women, and three sheep? Hey, they love each other. They're happy. Should I just quit here? Everyone look at me. There are always Philistines. They're always after us, and more importantly, they would, more than attack us, they would prefer, look at me, to do what? The problem is we didn't lose a battle. We got assimilated. I hear people in this church say the same things that Kennedy said. Well, they love each other. They're happy. I don't think it's even possible to turn back the clock. I don't think in this room, with the exception of one or two people, we have the moral repugnance that previous generations did. This would have been unthinkable. But for us, as long as you love each other and you're happy, we'll have you let you marry your three dogs and your two cats as long as you're happy. Look in your notes, please. Came to pass, 1 Samuel 7, while the ark abode in Kirjath-Jearim, that the time was long, for it was 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. And Samuel spake unto the house of Israel, saying, in the idea being implicit that for 20 years they didn't do this, and now for whatever reason they were thinking about the Lord, he says, well, if you do return unto the Lord with all your heart, then put away the strange gods and Ashtaroth. You have been assimilated into this mess. And he says, and prepare your hearts, the center of your being, unto the Lord, and serve him only, and he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. Verse 4, then the children of Israel did put away Baalim and Ashtaroth, and serve the Lord only. They had many of these gods, because these gods let them fit in with the Philistines. Folks, which is easier, resisting the Philistines or joining them? And the moment they decide to uncouple with these people and break away from the Philistine behavior and Philistine gods, the Philistines are coming after them militarily. Let me say this. If American Christians decided, I have several thinking, I have weird thoughts, and I'm not saying we should do this. I'm not a prophet. I'm not saying we should do this. I'm thinking maybe we just need to withdraw from the military. See how our country does without evangelicals in the military. How many liberals from Harvard and Yale are in the military? Let those morons go over and defend our country. I think we have been silent too long. I don't know what the solution is, but you hear me. Look at me, friend. The moment you decide you're not going to be assimilated, then you're going to be attacked. Immediately. Well, he continues. Put them away. Serve the Lord only. It says in the end of verse 3, and he, the Lord, will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. Then the children of Israel, they put away Baalim and Ashtaroth. Verse 5, and Samuel said, gather all Israel to Mizpah, to this watchtower, and I will pray for you unto the Lord. And they gathered together to Mizpah and drew water and poured it out before the Lord and fasted on that day and said there, we have sinned against the Lord. And Samuel judged the children of Israel in Mizpah. What is next necessary? There's got to be a rejection of false gods. And friend, when I say false gods, I do not mean Roman Catholic idols. In this room, how many Roman Catholic idols do we have? How many? I'm talking about mental images. I'm talking about, well, they love each other and they're happy. I'm talking about, so what's the big deal? That's what I'm talking about. Is that not a false god? Of course, that is the false god we have. There must be some rejection of the false gods, confession of sin. They got to the place where it says they confessed their sins. In part of verse 6, it says, we have sinned against the Lord. There needs to be a passion for God, for the living God, for the biblical God. And lastly, intercession by and for this country. By us and for this country. Samuel says, I will pray unto the Lord. I will pray for you unto the Lord. I haven't given you point four. I'm going to give you the 4 points and be done. There will always be Philistines. Number two, the Philistines are always after us. Number three, the Philistines don't just attack us, they prefer to assimilate us. And number four, we cannot defeat the Philistines without change. You hear me? If we keep doing what we've been doing, we'll keep getting what we've been getting. I want everyone to look at me. This is the time for choices. The time for choices is not when the battle starts. Look at me, friend. If you're going to plant your flag, you plant your flag that your children know we are for you 100%. We're here to love you, nurture you, encourage you, counsel you, love you. But the moment you decide to be stupid, you'll be stupid. You'll be stupid alone. You don't decide that when your child brings home the girl and wants to live in your basement. You decide that now. I am a Christian. I'm going to rear you as a Christian. If you decide to be stupid, you will be stupid alone. By the way, any change must begin here. It won't begin when you go to the party for the person that's rebelled against God and you're patting them and hugging them and saying, love you. By the way, it's interesting. Those kind of people never want to talk to me. And you can't figure out. They'll say, he's not very loving. No, I'm not very approving of their sin. Why are you approving of their sin? I'll say this and I'm done. I don't see much hope for change in this room. Will there be any? Father,